What's going on with dance and stuff? What's happening with dance and things? What's going on? What's happening? What's going on with dance and stuff?
Ding dong. Are you there?
I'm here.
Jeremy.
I'm here.
Oh, you're here.
I'm here.
It's Tuesday.
November 21st.
It's not true. Is that true?
It certainly is.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Happy New Year. 2023 is over. It's over.
No, it's not begun.
So are you watching The Crown?
Well, something I realized when I went to go watch the new season of The Crown is that I'd never even finished the previous season of The Crown because it was so boring. So boring. I started just kind of having on the last season on in the background.
I see.
I'm not even to the current season. I'm still kind of in shock at the casting of Prince Charles, but I am getting over it.
In the current season? Oh, he's in the previous season too.
Yeah.
I feel like, does he look old?
No, I mean, just like in general with this show, like, there has to be some flexibility with, like, the actors not being looky-likeys, but...
Yes.
With Diana, we have a kind of looky-likey, and then with Charles, we just have someone who's so diametric from the Prince Charles we know that you're like...
Well, it is very, like, movie star version, but I also just... I keep thinking, like, is this what he looks like now? I don't know. I felt like he had aged too much, but... I mean, also, like, Diana looks exactly the same, like, youthful's, like, perfection, but...
Right.
You know.
But I mean, she's probably, like, 6 inches taller than the real-life Diana, this actress, but...
Yeah.
We forgive. This actor's name is Dominic, is that right? Dominic?
No idea.
He's from The Affair.
From The Affair.
The Affair.
I can't even remember what that is.
It was a show. It was a show on television.
The Affair. Oh. Uh-huh. I think
Kathleen
I know what
Chalfont
that is.
Kathleen was on it. Anyway, so no, I'm sorry. I'm not going to
I love
up on the
this
crown.
Season, though, because it's essentially just Princess Diana, and it's such an intense... time.
Mm. Yeah, you know? Well, shit hits the fan.
Wow. There's like this inevitability that just makes everything so meaningful, I guess.
Oh, it's interesting. There's been all this kind of Diana attention, and now The Crown, they've had the chance to kind of like study everything that's come before, learn from people's mistakes, and then they get a long form opportunity to excavate the Diana narrative.
Uh-huh.
The Crown loves to take their time.
It's sort of weird. It's sort of weird how, I mean, it's not like the rest of the family isn't around and like involved, but it is sort of weird, and I'm curious how this season and series will end. But by the end of this first, I guess, I don't know, 4 episodes maybe?
You're deep.
Well, that's all that's out. I've watched it all that's out.
Oh, okay.
And basically... I think, like, the funeral is over. I think we're done with, like, the funeral.
Sad.
I think, you know, because, like, I remember this happening, where, like, I don't think before this particular moment, like, I had any personal relationship to The Crown, you know?
Oh, I mean, like, I knew Princess Diana existed as a concept.
Right. And we get that. But I think in the way that this season has it is sort of what it was for me of, like, this is, like, a an important person, and she's doing like the kind of work she's doing in this season, which is like the mines,
humanitarian
and,
stuff.
Yeah, the humanitarian stuff. Like, I don't think I, you know, I was 12 when she died, I think.
I think I was 16.
I think like before that, I'd, you know, vague.
I remember where I was. I mean, look.
I remember watching the funeral.
What are the events in our lives where we remember where we were when we found out? Like, I remember exactly where I was when I found out about Diana. I remember exactly where I was for 9/11.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then
Michael Jackson. I remember I was in an airport.
I have no idea. I don't remember that. I don't remember.
What else?
Maybe that's all that's happened.
Those are the events.
I remember where I was when I was diagnosed COVID? With cancer.
was this a phone call that you?
Oh my God! Thankfully not.
So you went in to get the results.
Yeah, but I had a feeling.
So you were at the hospital.
I was in a doctor's office. Well, I have a crazy gastroenterologist, and you know, I was not being prescribed a colonoscopy by all these dodo brain doctors I was meeting with. Mm-hmm. I recently told this story to someone because this week the topic of cancer has come up a lot because of Barton and his brain tumor, which is going into surgery today. So send your positive vibes today. Mm-hmm. Is the day.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, I ended up going in for colonoscopy of my own accord, and I paid $1,000 to do that. And so after I was being woken up from the colonoscopy, I remember the gastro coming over to me, and I'd never had one before, so I didn't really know like what the routine mm-hmm. was. But he was kind of like, we took a biopsy, and I'll know more on Monday, so we'll meet Monday, because this was a Friday, unfortunately for me. And he seemed kind of
weird,
subdued, because this guy was not a subdued person. He's wild. So
contrast.
I was like, something seems bad, but obviously mm-hmm. like they have to have the cellular material looked at.
Yeah.
In laboratoire. So I went in Monday. Actually, yeah, I could be wrong. Like, I'm wondering if they were just looking at images or if like, because he knew, like, he already knew. Like, when I saw him on Monday, he was like, I knew immediately.
Uh-huh.
And I was like, oh. And he was really quick about it and, like, not emotional. And he, in this call, this was at, like, 6 p.m., and I waited in the waiting room for a long time. I remember that. I remember being like, come on. Like, I need to go home. So I go into the office. He doesn't waste any time. He's just like, here's what's happening, and I'm setting you up with the best doctors. We're calling them immediately. So he gets on the phone like while I'm sitting there, and he sets up appointments for me for the following day. When I go in to meet with the gastro-oncology unit at Mount Sinai, and then they were the ones who set me up with the surgeon. But yeah, he was really quick because he was like, let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I had to go outside and figure out who to call.
Uh-huh.
And that was...
Ay, ay, ay.
That was tricky. I called Harriet.
Mm-hmm.
I think straight away just to be like...
Schedule.
Exactly, scheduling. And I called Jack, and I called my mom, which I was like very... That was the one I was looking forward to the least. I was like, uh-huh. Oh my God. Because I hadn't even told her I was going in for a colonoscopy.
Mm. Right.
So that was not great.
So,
but yeah. I stood beside the hospital where I was born to talk to my mom on the phone. And that, there's something about that.
Was this St. Vincent's?
Yeah.
It wasn't condos yet.
No. Well, I mean.
It was on its way.
Yeah.
Wow.
And... And I remember that. I remember what that was like. So that's the thing I remember. But everything's okay, everybody. Don't worry about me. What else?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry to ruin. Yeah. Sorry to deflate the mood. We were talking about Diana. Can we go back to Diana?
Well, you haven't watched it.
I know, I really haven't.
It's really tragic. It's really, I mean, we all know exactly, you know, I think, I don't know. There are things that happen in this where you're like, they're just making this up. Like, why, like, they, you know, they're like these scenarios that happen between Dodie and Diana, and like, no one could know. So it's kind of weird.
Well, they have to make stuff up for the show.
Well, they don't. Well, to some extent,
it's a show.
They wouldn't need these scenes, you know. That's
right.
You know, there's plenty of stuff, you know. I feel like there's like 700 biographies of Princess Diana, you know, like. So that was like a weird thing. And like I think cause we get like the beginning of their relationship in the previous season. But like there's a sense. Yeah. I think I always thought that they had more of a relationship than they seem to have had in this, in this portrayal.
Right now, I'm in a place where she's in a relationship with this doctor.
Uh-huh. Right.
So Dodie's not there yet.
Yeah. I mean, he's really not. Like, they kind of, I don't know. I'm just sort of like, well, they didn't have a relationship. She just, like, was on the boat.
Really?
She was on his boat for a few days. You know, it's like sort of.
Oh, so they had not known each other long when they perished.
No, but like the father really, the father was like, you need to get her to marry you, essentially.
Wow.
And he was engaged to someone else.
Goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, you're learning so much.
Yeah, you learn some stuff. But that's why, like, these other scenes where you're like, is any of this true?
Wow.
So that's sort of the weirdness of, like, having these, like, intimate scenes where they, like, you see him propose to her. But I don't know that anyone knows that that happened. Mm. So, you know.
Speculation.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, we'll talk about it more once you've seen it,
I'm
guess.
Sorry.
Or we won't, but
I did see something that you will see soon, I hope, last night.
What did you see?
It's also about tragic women, but it's but it's fictional.
Did you see May December?
I did.
It's gonna be on Netflix. I kind of feel like I'm not gonna on December 1st. No
yeah,
less.
You can definitely wait till December 1st to watch this.
It's hard because I feel like what's her name is one of the worst actresses to ever appear in a movie.
Natalie?
Yeah.
Oh. Change your feelings about Natalie Portman.
Well, she's a specific thing, and I'm curious if like Todd Haynes knows what to do with it, because I think it's possible.
Well, I think the fact that she's playing an actress is ultimately very beneficial.
That helps.
In this
yes.
situation.
Yes.
In this situation. I can't wait to talk to you about it.
Oh, okay.
I can't wait to talk to you about it.
Great. I'm excited to see it. I ended up hurting my back.
Uh-oh.
Last week, right after we recorded, basically. So I didn't go to see Priscilla. That didn't happen.
But did you not come into the city to do your job?
Yeah, I had to work. I did the work.
You did it.
I did it.
You got it. You have to make money, but you can't
you
go to movies.
Well, that was supposed to happen like that night that it happened. Ooh. So.
What happened? What'd you do?
I'm just old.
Oh dear.
No, I mean this thing. This like happens like once a year. So.
Oh. Is it feeling better?
It is feeling better. Okay. But not as good as I'd like it to be. Okay. But I did watch the beginning of Twin Flames.
Oh my.
And I was like, this is unwatchable. This is like everything I've seen. I was like, is this a parody of like this kind of thing?
And well, then, it is a low rent cult for sure.
Yeah. And then last night Jack was like, I want to look at this. So we skipped to the third, the last episode. It's like a three-part thing. Because I was like, let's find out what is going on.
What else did
they
do?
Wow. I was like, I wonder if Reed laughed through this.
I was utterly shocked. The gender stuff? I did not laugh through it. I was completely horrified.
We laughed and laughed.
No.
Because it was so absurd.
I just could not
believe.
I'm like,
this is what happens when you don't have a sense of humor.
Well, that's interesting because.
Right?
Look, you can look at these crazy people who are saying crazy things into the cameras. And yes, they're ridiculous clowns. But really, what I'm thinking about are who are these people who are listening to these clowns? Like, how sad do you need to be?
Oh, like, yeah.
People are really sad. Right.
No, I had two thoughts. I had, like, this is what happens when you don't have a sense of humor, and Trump is definitely going to become president.
Yeah. Right. Wait, really? No, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it.
Well, I mean, I heard the name Jill Stein today, so we can leave it at that. I'm like, oh, so we're just going to do this again. We're just going to walk right on into this again.
Can you even imagine if this happens, if she does this?
I mean, everyone seems to be doing what they once did.
I'm like, so nobody thinks history is relevant, apparently.
I don't know what to say. If you want to know the results of the 2024 election, you can watch Twin Flames, now streaming on Netflix.
No, it is incredible to me that there's all these people out there who seemingly, like, many of these people in this cult are well-educated. They seem, on the surface, like, vaguely okay, but then they're really not. They're really not. Really not. Very impressionable in a way that's like, but why are these clowns making an impression on you? These clowns.
Because they're desperate.
But that kind of desperation is so unfamiliar to me that I'm like, go on a dating app. Go to speed dating. Do anything. But this is nonsense. You know what I mean? Like, when suddenly the spiritual dating group that you're part of then proposes that you actually will not be finding your twin flames out in the world because your twin flames, ta-da, are here on this Zoom call with us.
Oh, my God.
You didn't know that yesterday, but
and
guess what?
And because we're all women, some of you have to be men.
Yeah, because obviously women, you can't be with women. Because we're so deeply homophobic that we're just going to turn you into men. We're just going to mandate that you have to become the divine.
Well, I don't even think it is that. I think it's more just like, we know it's going to be easier to get you into like a fantasy hetero situation than to like confront you, like say that you have to be like a lesbian or whatever.
Well, no, it's because, here's why. It's because absurd. this insane man has no access to actually being able to communicate any sort of nuanced information to anybody. So what he understands and knows for his own body and his own mind is it just applies to everybody. Everybody has to.
Yeah, I didn't watch the second episode, so I don't know. But
did you understand that he thinks he's Jesus?
I understood from the first episode that he set out to make a cult. So I think he knows that he's like a businessman.
Absolutely. But then he's proposing to the people on the calls very explicitly that he is the second coming.
Sure, but that's just like the latest sales pitch.
Sure, you know,
the whole thing is about like a business. Like, I'm just going to do whatever like makes sense as a business here. And like telling, oh, we only have women in this cult. That's sort of an issue when it's like we want to like partner people up. So let's just like, you know, there are men and women. Like, find that masculine side of yourself. It's incredible that people are like, oh, okay.
I'll pack my bags, move to some other place, and change my gender.
It's wild.
Yeah, people who've previously not experienced gender dysphoria, it seems, who just get told by idiots on YouTube and Zoom.
But isn't that, I do feel like that is the driving fantasy, that like people kind of just want to be told what to do.
Oy.
They just want to be topped.
Oh my God.
That's the fantasy.
It's so sick.
That's kind of the most surprising is the twin thing, because you have this scenario in which you have this other person that just like the abandoning of that other person who seems to be kind of like your foundation.
Uh-huh.
But I wonder if it's all centered around the other twin getting married.
Of course.
And then she's just like,
well, that instigated this event.
She needed to get married.
She couldn't believe it. She was like, I'm so, why am I not getting to experience this?
Mm. You know, maybe that was in the second episode.
Also, just the way the two of them look and the way they interact and the way in which,
I was like, mom, let it go. You already have one. You don't need two.
Not the twins. Jeff and Shalala or whatever her name is.
In her Chanel.
But also, like, the way that guy, is his name Jeff? Jeff, let's call him Jeff.
Sure.
The way that Jeff is so grotesque about displaying their wealth and announcing it as, like, a sign of success to these cult members. And then the way he treats Shalala, I've now named her Shalala, the way that he treats her on all these calls, Shalala. And the way that she's like, she's actually not even interested in saying anything. She just knows that she needs to sit there in order to like make sure the money keeps rolling in.
Yeah, I mean, I also thought I would never take advice from people whose houses look like this. These other people's houses look so much better than the Shalala and Jeffy.
It's crazy. These are the most untrustworthy people I could ever imagine coming into contact with.
I know. We need to start a cult.
Truly. It seems easy. If those clowns can do it.
I think you just have to, like, stick to it. Persevere.
Yeah. I think I am. Like, I am kind of in a cult. Sicko.
Dance, line dancing?
Well, that will, Aval, that's a kind of cult.
A downtown dance cult.
But there's also that. There's also like,
yeah, there's devoted also that, to something like, that like I absolutely pay, doesn't work for you.
That I pay money to go to this thing, to observe a thing that from the outside looks completely absurd and absolutely like mental illness. And then I take it seriously, continue to give it support, and expect that somehow it will give back to me. So yes, I'm in a cult.
Yeah, downtown dance cult.
I have a better relationship to line dance.
Art cult. That's a good.
Yeah. Oh my! Speaking of art cult, Jeremy.
Oh yeah, what are we talking about?
I went to see a perform a thing on Sunday.
Oh my God.
Well, that was my first mistake. Right. I knew. When, you know, the
performance is centered around like a kind of quasi performance meets quasi art, visual art, right?
Performance like, is yeah. Well, it's the like premise is
garbage art world.
Right. They're like, we are presenting performance through the lens of visual arts. What does that mean? That means garbage. We commission visual artists to make performances when they have truly no idea how to make a performance. None.
Well, they also don't know how to do the other things they do. You know what I mean?
Well, look, I think some of these people are legitimately kind of interesting visual artists who have, like, a very developed practice. Like, for example.
Here we go.
Here we go. Now, look, I only endured one Performa event this year because I knew. And I only went because I ran into Mariah Evans on the street and she had just come from it and said, I think it will be interesting to you in your practice. I said, fine. I'm just going to go. She gave me a 50% off discount code. I was like, I will pay $20 to go to this thing. It's it's on my way home.
Okay.
Okay. So I had already heard that Marcel Zama was doing a thing at the Abrams Playhouse because the people involved in it were in and around us. I did subsequently find out that it was truly, again, a completely thoughtless performance, but with a lot of thought into the aesthetics of it, which because Marcel Zama is a painter illustrator.
Uh-huh.
And so you're like, okay.
Uh-huh.
So I didn't go to the show. I did not go see Marcel's show. I'm sorry. I'm sure it had very beautiful things to look at. And I, you know, that is my area of interest, is looking at beautiful things. So.
Sure.
But I struggle to endure performances that are, I don't even know the word.
Performances.
Thank you. So I go to the Donald Judd Gallery on Spring Street because an elder German artist named Franz Walter is activating some of these garment-based pieces of visual art made of cotton canvas. And, you know, they look interesting in the images. It's all very austere. And so you enter into the gallery and they ask that you sit around the perimeter or whatever, and they're going to be using the central space to activate these objects. And you're like, okay. So already I'm like, well, this is seeming really kind of low key. You know, I was like, what is the performance? So we're all sitting there. Franz Walter is sitting on a little platform. He's 84 years old. He's looking delighted that people have come to see his thing. Now, this thing had already happened several times throughout Performa. And the museum docents or whoever they were, the Performa assistants who were like responsible for activating this stuff, they seemed as if they were doing it for the first time. And there was such anxiety in the way that they were carrying out these pieces with gloves and unfolding them like carefully, like, you know, telling people with such anxiety, like, oh, we're going to need this group, you, to get up and move.
Precious moments.
Because the fabric is going to unfold to over here. So, like, you have to get up and go away. And it's like, well, you just told me I could sit here literally 1 minute ago. Like, you should have not told us to sit. So the very first thing that happens is they come out and they unfold a black pad. And then Franz Walter, from his little platform, kind of surprise emerges sitting. He says, you are welcome to sit on the pad to activate the material.
Ugh.
And you're like,
goodbye.
So, you know, people who sit on it have to take off their shoes. There's a bunch of children there, which are they seemingly planted. So, like, I guess people involved in Performa brought their nieces and nephews, whatever. And the kids immediately, like, as if cued, get up and go sit on this black pad. And then a few other people go and sit. And then we, as an audience, just sit there for literally 5 to 10 minutes in silence. And I was like, this is kooky, crazy. Like, what are we doing? Like, everyone's looking at what's going on this pad of just people sitting with really weird delight. I was like, what are you delighted at? Exactly. So, whatever.
This is it. But that's the whole thing. It's just like people who have never seen a show.
Well, I read in the program that, like, this is an installation he had done in MoMA decades ago where, like, museum goers.
All those people who saw it are dead.
Well, In the original construction, people entering the museum could just come in and, like, participate with the stuff. It wasn't, like, a performance. You weren't, like, trapped in a gallery. They were toys.
Yeah.
So then the next thing is they bring out this, like, this parcel of fabric and they unfold it, and tucked in the folds of this thing are these, like, demi kind of, like, Japanese or South Korean garments that just sort of get strapped onto four of the museum assistants, who then just stand and stare at each other for 10 minutes. And we as an audience are now just looking at this. And I'm like, this is 10 seconds. You can now take off the things, go through the actions of folding it back up, put it away, let's move along. This is not a stare at it for 10 minutes. This is, let's go. This is not a performance. Then they move on to, what came next? And look, these objects, very good looking. Very good looking. I'm not going to fault the objects themselves. I'm happy to look at them. They had these, like, red canvas buckets.
This is like how to get people to a show, to a gallery show, is by, like, pretending it's a performance.
Guess how much it cost for normal ticket goers. Oh, my God,
right. And you're, like, charging people.
It was more than it was $40.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And anyways, it went on and on. There was, like, a few more activations where, like, people put these canvas buckets over their head. And then they were, like, couldn't see. And Franz Walter was like, don't take too many steps because you would be dizzy. And I was like, this is nuts.
No.
Anyways, and then they had a caterpillar one where people had to, like, step into these, like, openings in this, like, long canvas cloth, and then they had to walk around connected. I was like, this is...
Children. It's for children.
I'm glad there were kids there, because at least in that way it was, like, even remotely charming, because I was like, these are kids' games, like, made... The materiality was very austere and sophisticated, but I was like, these are sophisticated, like, Bauhausian canvas objects for children. And I was like, and people have paid $40 to come in here and look delighted to look at it. This is crazy. Been like,
well, I'm taking one.
Well, no, honestly, like, as a designer, like, I'm it was fine to look at them. I wish I could have just walked around the gallery.
So the moral of the story is, like, you too could be taking people's money in this way by making bullshit stuff like this.
Me? Are you talking about me?
Yeah.
Oh, I could do it in a far more dynamic way.
Well, slay. You don't have to.
No, I don't. But I'm now, you know, I'm really, like, I have this very deep thing that I know Jack has also experienced, and we've all experienced, with, like, feeling this resentment towards the way in which visual art can sort of, like, occupy performance space with, like, no skill.
Uh-huh.
And I guess it's okay. You know? I guess that's okay.
Yeah. Because also what happens is that performance occupies performance space without any
awareness. That's also true. That's also true. Oh, goodness. I didn't want to get so worked up.
That's generally, like, my feeling when I see shows where I'm like, but wait, have you... So what? Either you've not seen other shows, or you just don't care that other shows have existed before.
Right.
And you're just going to do this.
Well, and then subsequently, kind of, like, the feedback that I got from other people going to performer shows was somewhat identical to what I experienced, of people being like, well, there's a person who, like...
Yeah, that's what performa is, to my understanding, from what I've seen.
What is most challenging about it for me is the way it is, the people watching it and the way in which they seem to take it so seriously or are so delighted by it. And I'm like, no. People, anyways.
But that's, I mean, that's the interesting thing about a performer going into that space is because, well, it is like children in the sense of, like, inexperienced viewership, which is literally all audiences. This is, think of, like, what has to happen on Broadway.
Right. It does then so confuse me about, like,
really
the money disparity and how, like, this environment is so deeply moneyed. And
well, because there's stuff to sell,
like, right? It's
the sure stuff. There's the $40 yeah. tickets or whatever, but like they're yeah, they don't have to. It's a whole different like game in terms of the artists justifying their time because they're right. selling stuff.
Yeah.
So like, if they're like hardly making any money off of the show, the quote unquote show, doesn't really matter because what they're actually doing is a kind of marketing for their right. their stuffs.
For their stuffs.
And expanding their brand and whatever, and getting like people who might, like you, might be like interested in a performance,
bamboozled
into like seeing their nice stuff, which you might also appreciate even if the show is bad.
I did, and that's true. I did appreciate the stuffs.
Yeah, so anyways, it all worked out for them.
That's true, and in a way, did it work out for me? A little. I have to think about it.
Yeah, I saw some shows that I don't want to talk about, but you just make me appreciate Pam and Beth all yeah. the more.
All the more.
Like people doing slow motion, I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, go see a Beth Gill show.
Yeah.
If you want to like think about slow.
Slowness. Working. Yeah.
Meaningful slowness.
Meaningful, yeah.
It's insane. Well,
it can be done in a way that's, like, incredibly good. Yeah. And then also people then just do it as a way to fill time.
Uh-huh. Ugh.
I know. Tess Dorman had an absolutely excellent show at Pageant last week. I can't say enough good things about it.
Great.
So excellent. I mean, beautifully crafted costumes. A+. It was so good. Excellent. Excellent. Can't say enough good things. If it comes back to any space in New York or elsewhere in this country, you must go see it. Tess Dorman. You gotta go.
You gotta go. There you go. Someone made a show.
I had a gathering with Ned and Ethan and a friend of theirs, Perrin, who's now a friend of mine. We had a gathering at Perrin's home this weekend to watch Home for the Holidays and eat comforting
wow.
foods.
Wow.
It was the best. It's absolutely the best. When did you last see that film?
Years? Decades?
Maybe revisit it while you're up at Michelle's. Everyone will enjoy.
Okay. I'll think about it.
Okay.
I'll think about it.
Everyone loves Holly Hunter, don't we?
Do we?
And Bancroft?
This is not really a movie that I would prioritize in my life, but...
Really?
But, who knows?
Highly recommend. Highly recommend.
I know. I know, it's a fave of yours.
I just love it.
You just love it. Do you watch it every year?
I do think it's definitely one of my most frequently viewed movies because in watching it again this past Sunday, I was like, whoa, I really know this film.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like when you start to know the kind of details of the scenic design and you start to know the lines.
Yeah.
And you're like, ooh, the I really sequences. Know this. Yeah. You start to know like in what scenes the hair is going to shift or they're going to have too much makeup on. Yeah.
crucial plot points like
wow. Robert Downey Jr. He's giving a crazed performance.
It's crazy.
That is drug fueled, but he also is doing this amazing thing, which, like, remember the guy from Passages who's just so unbearable? His performance has shades of that, but then also makes you
America.
Love him and care about him in a way that the guy from Passages, we don't. I mean, I don't.
Right. No. No.
No. I'm happy for his misfortune at the end of the film.
I've been rewatching Girls.
Oh, wow. That's an inspired idea.
Yeah. It is a good idea.
Wow.
It's quite excellent, I think.
Anything specific worth remarking on today?
I'm surprised at how short the episodes are.
Oh, are they half hour?
I guess they're half hours, so, you know, they're like 20 minutes or whatever that brings. Wow. 26 minutes.
Well, no, because they're half an hour. Because it's HBO. Yeah.
I don't know. They seem very short. I'm like, oh, okay. Next, like, through a season in no time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's very, for me, very much like a New York City that I lived in.
Mm.
And, you know, watching it when it came out, it was sort of like, uh-huh. Like, this is just, like, how it is.
Yeah, I remember that feeling of watching it and being like, I am adjacent to this. I never quite felt like,
yes,
this is exactly me, but I was like, I know these people.
Right. I'm not any of these characters, but
right.
These are real people.
Right. I was like, these people are literally right there. Like, I'd look to the left and be like, uh-huh. Girls.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Such a good show. Wait, I saw another show even.
Another show even?
Yes.
Oh my god, we tried to watch, well, we skimmed through The Killer.
The Killer?
This Michael Fassbender movie.
Oh.
Directed by, what's his name?
Oh yeah, the David Fincher.
Terrible. It's
okay.
It's kind of unbelievable that he thinks this is okay, but
do we think Michael Fassbender's like football coach movie is gonna be any good?
Football coach movie.
Michael Fassbender's in some like comedy looking thing where he plays like a South African football coach or something.
Okay.
I don't know either.
This was terrible. And it basically just following him around on like a murder thing, revenge, whatever.
I was pointed toward by a friend of the podcast and someone who I met last summer in a Cunningham workshop, Amit. Amit was here in Michael Keegan Dolan's show that was happening, not the St. Anne's one, but the one in Fairfield. At Fairfield University, which is a bigger show called Mom, that's happened
with a question mark.
No, well, I'm questioning it because the spelling I think was like M-A-A-M or something.
I think Mom with a question mark is good.
Mom, but it was you know, it's Irish. Michael Keegan Dolan is
Irish.
And okay. So I went on the Metro North to a show. I walked down unlighted roads for 20 minutes to the theater. Oh, crazy.
You just did this sort of adventure to Princeton.
I did. It's the same exact thing. Very similar. So I go to the Quick Center. I think, oh my God, where am I? What's going on? I sit in the audience. I'm like, oh, please, mercifully, let's do this. And then I saw a show that was like very highly produced. Shows. You know, it was like a lot of money had been put into this show by like probably, you know, various governments of the world and
various governments of the world.
Various
absolutely.
Governments, yeah. Predominantly I'm assuming the British Isles. European. But this is a show that has toured around. And it's in the vein of kind of tableau style work that I think Pina Bausch really figured out.
Oh, okay.
And then
it's a dance.
It's a dance theater. Okay. It's dance.
Oh, but it is okay.
Yeah, there's there's not talking per se.
You know what I think I hate most of all?
What
is like a narrative dance?
Oh, this is not that.
Oh, okay.
No, this is tableau. This is, you know how Pina Bausch pieces are like, these are people, and then they're going to enact these kind of ideas or thoughts, but like it doesn't really hold together as a story.
I see. Okay, that's good. That's
no story. And also in the way that, like, you know that Demetrius Papaioannou does the kind of gay circus, what have you, that Brianna is in?
Right. Okay.
Right, which is just visual vignette.
Uh-huh.
It's like, these are, it's physical.
I don't like that.
Well, that's, I'm just telling you what we're dealing with.
Okay.
And I'm trying to think of other points of comparison. Sometimes Ohad Naharin does these vignette tableau-based evening-length works where they're, you know, it's always the same people. They're always wearing the same costume, but they're going through these different ideas. And they're always all there together. They're there together. This particular work was centered around this excellent Irish musician who played all these varying sizes of concertina, which are these little accordions.
That's fun.
Well, we loved that. And then eventually these really cool curtains on casters suddenly start tilting down, and then the whole like curtain falls off the edge of the track, which is, that was good.
Okay.
And reveals additional musicians who are a band with like piano and strings and percussion and stuff. Mm-hmm. And the performers at this point have already been on stage for a while. There is a child who's also central to the piece, who's a, you know, 8 to 10 year old little girl wearing a white dress, who I'm assuming was a kind of like point of, I don't know. Honestly, like, I was completely, I found the child completely unnecessary, though the whole piece seemed to revolve around her, and the last image is her as an angel. And I was like, what the fuck? So I guess she was this sort of touchstone of purity in a way, like in the context of all these adult people who are working through feelings of like, horniness and, this felt like there was a lot, it was a very horny show. And also a show that seemed to center like male aggression and like the ways in which men need to sort of like shake out their shake their inner banshee out of themselves or something. Okay. There was some yelling, there was kissing, there was a part where a guy ran around to everyone in the group and kissed them in various ways.
Okay.
And the audience really loved that part. And
don't you just love an audience and their reactions to stuff?
Well, in a weird way, like when that section began, I was like, oh no. But then by the end of it, I was like, well, that's sort of interesting. There was excellent dancers in it. I just want to say, this is a group of, you know, dancers predominantly trained in Europe who are like really good. They just have like, they're excellent at being there, and they're excellent at moving, and they knew what they were doing, and clearly this piece had been worked on for a long time. It's not my cup of tea, if you know what I mean. I can enjoy a Pina Bausch piece, but like imagine a Pina Bausch dance made through the lens of like a very straight Irish man who values like pub culture. I was like, I guess this just isn't for me. The performers were dressed in varying organizations of like black suiting the men had on, but kind of funky, like, oh, but we're going to have bare feet or white socks, and like everything's just slightly funky. And the women all had different black dresses cut just below the knee with cap sleeves.
I don't like this.
You want to not talk about it anymore?
It's so depressing.
I know. But look, it had good music. My cult strikes again. It had good music, and it had good dancers, and the audience, liked it.
That can really save a show.
Well, and the show, honestly, very skillfully made itself available to a conventional audience, because this was not a New York audience. This was Fairfield, Connecticut, and the audience had a good time.
Well, that's the theater part.
Yeah.
That's, like, why people like to lean into that.
Yeah.
You can telecast things like that.
Oi.
Oi.
I did that. I walked to the train in the pitch black, and I eventually made it
at home. 4 o'clock.
No, I was home. I think I was home before midnight.
That's good.
I feel like that's what happened in the universe of shows for me. I went to the Guggenheim yesterday, and I
the saw googly goos. The googly googly.
Googly
googly. Googly
googly gogs. You know, there's a cafe on one of the upper levels of the Guggenheim that's like tricky to access. And I kind of like...
Secret.
Yeah, and
sounds like a good place to go.
I asked one of the docents to like...
I vaguely recall this.
You kind of have to like go into a gallery and then through a door and then you're like suddenly in it. And it has lovely views of the park and the food is good.
Wow.
Yeah, I was like, this is an absolutely delicious turkey sandwich.
It's a secret space.
And a beautiful piece of chocolate cake.
Ah, yum.
Yum. Mm, mm. I was... Actually, this was another... So Amit, who I didn't get to say hi to after the show, but is friends with another one of the cast members named Connor. And then Connor and I connected via Instagram. And then Connor was like, oh, would you like to do X, Y, and Z with me? Get coffee in the city. Because is also a friend of the pod.
That's so nice.
Connor and I did the Guggenheim together yesterday and had a nice chat over a turkey sandwich.
What did you see there?
They had a show on about darkness. And I think it was both aesthetically... objects of darkness, and then like socioculturally, like commentary on people of color. More racially motivated art. So that was one of the exhibition going up the ramp, and then they had an interesting exhibition with Korean art from artists in the 80s. I think that was what it was about. And that had some very cool objects. And then lunch. I have to say, I wasn't absorbing the art very well because I was in an interesting conversation.
Well, Guggenheim's not a great place to look at things, you gotta say.
I have to say as well.
But it's a place to go.
Yeah, it kind of lives up to its exterior. You know, like in a way that most of these like weird shape buildings do not. This is one of the weird shape buildings where you go in and you're like, yeah, it is this.
Yeah, you just kind of can't compete with the building.
It's great. So. But honestly, it is poorly devised as a museum.
Absolutely. But, you know, I mean, in a way, I'm like, slay. You really figured out how to, like, do exactly what you want and get someone to pay to build it.
Right, like your object is the art object.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Yeah, you won.
Frank Lloyd Wright, slay all day, Frank Gehry, and go fuck yourself.
And that's Architecture in Review.
That's our review of old American white architecture.
Oh my goodness.
What else? I saw a building on the Upper East Side that's being built, which is like the new like Bank of America or Chase Bank building or something. It is the most kind of nefarious, scary looking building I have ever seen. It like projects into the street like it's going to do harm.
Uh-huh.
It's so scary.
Violent.
Yeah, but I was like, this is effective. Like this architect was like, I'm going to scare the residents of the Upper East Side.
I mean, no one's going to live in this building anyway. It's just going to be, you know, rented out or, you know, bought by money people.
Yeah, but people have to look at it.
Well, yeah. Don't go in there.
Imposing. Don't go near it. Ominous.
Stay away.
But do go look at it. It's really something else.
There was some New York Times article about buildings being... I guess turned into like apartments or something. You know, like all these like empty office buildings, I guess. And like, so maybe you can go live in these things.
Oh, probably costs a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just get a job.
But you could have a really good view out of a floor to ceiling window.
Yeah, and be terrified every single day. Yay, New York City.
What else is coming up? There's Juilliard Winter Dances is coming up. Nutcracker starts right after Thanksgiving. All these cult activities. Get your tickets back.
Cult pass.
Yeah, cult pass. Downtown
Modern Dance. Oh my God. I only have to go see one more thing. Actually, I'm not sure if I have to see it. Ugh.
Okay.
I am just like, I don't like dance. I feel like Betty Davis when she's...
She's on a
talk show. I don't like Dick Cavett. Theater.
She's like, I hate theater. Ugh. That's hard. Really, I get it.
Cult.
I want to go see Becca Blackwell's show at Soho Rep.
Oh, yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah. And I want to see... I don't know. That's it. This fall season, it's always like this when you get to the end of this crazy sense dance of humor. Season. And you just feel so burned out.
Used up.
Used.
Burned to the ground.
Yeah. It's like... It's only when you've given too much. It's the opposite of the
point. You know what I mean?
I suppose, yes. And yet, this is why I know I've been... My Bamboozled. Brain has been disorganized by the cult. I have guilt for having missed things.
Well, because you still believe that, like, just one more session with the guru and you'll be enlightened.
Yeah. Hey, does
happen.
I wonder if I could get this information very easily, I suppose, but I'm kind of scared to. But Patricia Delgado and Justin Peck have worked as choreographers on this show called the Buena Vista Social Club that I'm assuming is based on the film that's happening at Atlantic Theater Company in Brooklyn.
Okay.
And so I was like, I want to see that. I want to see, like, fun dancing and fun Cuban music, and I want to see that. And so I looked into tickets, and
It's like a play? Or you think it's like a... What is it?
I don't know.
Okay.
It has to... apparently has very serious dancing in it.
Is it expensive?
Jeremy?
It's theater. It's a play.
No. I'm very confused about the numbers that I saw.
Okay. I think it's like off-Broadway.
Yes, it is
off-Broadway. I don't know what that means, but...
Yes.
I think tickets start around $120.
Again, like, if it had been that, I would have honestly... I would have truly just considered buying a ticket. Or maybe asking Justin for a discount code. Something like that, because I was like, if I can get it down to 80, that's good, that's fine. I'll pay that much to go see this thing that
$500.
Yes.
Yeah. Interesting.
So tickets.
Something's for going this on. Show, are there famous people in it?
I don't know. So tickets for this show. You don't know
anything about this show.
Are online are $370, and then with service fees and taxes are $522. I was like, is this a Beyonce concert? Like, what? Like, what am I not knowing about? Beyonce concert's
like thousands of dollars. This is the world. This is how it works.
$522. I really was like,
it's crazy.
I felt so confused.
And we all know that rich people are stupid, so.
But I just would like to get to the bottom of it. I guess I'll talk to Justin and Patricia about it, but I'm so, so confused. I've never seen anything like it. I honestly, like, in my experience...
I'm just, in my mind, I'm doing the math of how many, like, incredible meals I could have for that amount of money. And I'm like, I don't know. I guess those are my priorities. I'd rather eat than...
I didn't get that far. I just started to think, like... Well, I initially thought, oh, this must be like a gala performance or something. Like,
maybe I need to leave this cult.
Well, no, so then I moved on to other nights and they were all like that. I was like, what? Isn't that amazing? Anyways, I'll look into it again. I could be wrong. Like, maybe I just was... Maybe they were $5.22. I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't either.
I think there's, like, maybe famous... There would have to be famous people. That's my my thought.
Well, Justin and Patricia are famous, so maybe they're, you know...
I don't know that that's true.
No, I know. Their contribution...
Then I think, like... I don't think the Illinois tickets were that much.
No. Well, they're on sale now, so you can get your tickets to see the show in Chicago in the Armory. So everyone go off, get your tickets. Get your tickets, support Illinois.
Just $500 a ticket.
It's not going to be $500. That's right.
Yeah.
All right. It's been an hour.
Yeah. So hopefully this episode gets posted and isn't just deleted.
Oh, sorry about last week, everybody.
Yeah. Spotify. What is it called? Spotify for podcasters. Mm. It's really...
they're trying to sabotage.
Has not... you know, they purchased Anchor, I guess. And yeah, they just like delete. I should switch the email because they do send an email that's like, we deleted your episode. Because I assume for some, it basically is like, because it violates these. And then I just re-upload it and post it again.
Did we violate something?
I'm like... Did we say something wrong?
Steven Petronio is called in.
Is this controlled by the downtown dance cult?
Yeah, Steven Petronio sent an email to Spotify and was like, take them down.
No music. There's nothing in this. So I don't know.
We violated. We're violators.
Whatever.
I know.
Good night. Good luck.
Claire Saffitz and Allison Roman and others sent a cease and desist. They were like, stop talking about our recipes.
Stop doing our marketing for us.
Stop. Yeah, exactly. Please don't share our recipes on your podcast.
Yeah. All right. Well, I hope you all had a great Thanksgiving because that was yesterday. Or, weeks ago or whatever. Merry Christmas.
Wow, it's really
the holiday.
Right,
it's Black Friday. It's 20 degrees. It's
I'm going to my mom's tomorrow. That's fun.
That's great.
Okay.
All right. Well, until next time. We love you.
We love you. Happy Thanksgiving.
Gobble gobble.